No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true?
Welcome to Shadow Politics. This is Maria Sanchez, and I am ordinarily the co-host with Senator Michael D. Brown, who is the shadow senator from the District of Columbia. Unfortunately, he had a last-minute complication, so he's unable to be part of our program today unless he does find a way to call in. But he's not going to be in general co-hosting or hosting with me this afternoon. So I've got you all to myself, which is a rare luxury for me, too. If you'd like to call in, our number is 888-627-6008. We're going to go through a bit of the high points of the news of the week. We don't have a guest this hour, and I'm happy to do that too. And I thought maybe I'd share a little bit about myself with you, since if you are a regular BBS radio station listener and you've listened to the senator, you probably know most of what you need to know about his cause for statehood, etc. But if you are new to me, I thought I'd give us a little bit of a background about my career thus far and where I find myself today on October 16th, 2016. I was a talk radio host for decades. I started out at KFI, which is the most listened to radio station in the country. It's in Los Angeles. And this is before the days of syndication, so that was when everything was live and local. And I started on KFI doing fill-ins for the weekend hosts as well as the Monday through Friday folks. And then I, at the time when I started at KFI, I had a partner, and we had a show that the two of us did together, and it was called Bitchin' with Sanchez and Walker. Bitchin' as in cool Southern California surf kind of talk, as in that's bitchin', not as in bitching, as in complaining. I was then had a program on Saturday and Sunday with her, and then I got offered a full-time gig in Sacramento, California, Monday through Friday. So fortunately, I had a then progressive husband who was like, sure, go for it. I had met and married that man, that ex-husband. We met at KFI, actually. And so I was commuting with four children at home and a fairly new husband, remarriage, and four children in grade school. Now, through technology, I was able to broadcast from our home on Monday and Friday. My shift was 9 a.m. to noon. I was the lead-in to Dr. Laura Schlesinger. And then I'd jump on a plane Monday night, and I'd be in studio Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And this is the pre-911 days. So my shift would get – I'd get off the air at 12 noon on Thursday, jump in the car, drive to the airport, and catch a 12:20 flight, if you can believe that, get to Los Angeles in an hour, get home in another hour, and be at school at 2:30 to pick the kids up from school. And then I would be broadcast Friday morning from our home, and then I'd have the rest of that day and the weekend and Monday to be normal, if you will. Now, what I did with the kids when I was in Sacramento Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evenings – well, no, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday evenings – was do – this is back in the day before much – of the internet, if you can remember back then, the kids and I would do homework by fax, and we would do prayers by telephone, and then I'd come back on Thursday and start all over again. So I did that for an entire year, 12 months, and after the end of the year, my body and the stress of that started to break down. So every month, we were running a test to see what was wrong. The tests would come back negative, which was the good news. Finally, my physician said to me, Maria, it's your lifestyle. You got to quit that job. And so I did. And the next day, my body was completely and totally back to normal. So it just shows you the mind-body connection with what stress can do. So from that point forward, I obviously tried to find opportunities in the Southern California area, which I did, but mostly focused on raising my four children, because that was my thing, is that I didn't raise four children. I didn't have four children to delegate that to another. So I call that my greatest accomplishment. The thing probably I'm most proud of is my four children, who are independent, autonomous, self-sufficient. I've been an empty nester for 6 years now, when my youngest went off to college, and I've been divorced for 12 years now. So it's been quite the ride. So talk radio is my passion. I did everything but politics. So I was, and probably still am, unusual in that regard, because most of talk radio is about politics. And I always feel like I am very active politically, which is actually how Senator Brown found me. But I never really shared my personal politics, because I used to say there's a bunch of angry white men out there that are doing just a great bang up job about that. So I figured, why do what is already being done? And so people would say, well, then what do you talk about? And I said, well, about 95% of what our lives are about. Well, what's that? Current events, newsmakers, lifestyle, health, relationships. And lo and behold, there's lots of program to go over that and go through those kinds of topics. So every day, I used to have a morning drive radio program at one point. I had an afternoon drive radio program at one point. I've been an NPR. I co-hosted a program for the affiliate called Crosstalk, and it was also about differing opinions about newsmakers and issues in the news. A lot of my guests, whenever their field of expertise was in the news, that's when they would come on my program. So I used to call them my correspondents. So I had political correspondents, I had health correspondents, I had medical correspondents, I had just a plethora of folks that I could have in my arsenal. When that field was in the news, then they'd come onto the show and they'd give us some perspective about what that means, or how we can distill the story, or what this latest study says, or what have you. So that was, I used to always just say to myself as I was getting the car to go to the studio, I wonder what I'm going to learn today, because every day was a new adventure. So that was fun. Then 2008 came, the economy started to tank. That was my last full-time radio gig. In August, I was on the air at that time from 3 to 6 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was called the Maria Sanchez Show, and we would do weather and traffic and news and then have the interviews, et cetera. And I, at that time, I was running my own board. So I was my own engineer, which I had learned about 5 years before that, and loved running my own show because that was fun. I didn't have to follow anybody's advice. I could just take a break when I wanted to. Of course, we had to do traffic and news at certain points, but otherwise I could break within X amount of time when, you know, for sponsors and commercials and what have you. So I turn off the mic at 6 o'clock, and into the studio walks the HR gal and my boss. And I think to myself, oh my goodness, what have I said? Because these two people together is never a good sign. And they said to me, Maria, it's not because of ratings, it's not because of performance, and it's not because of revenue, it's because of the economy. We need to let you go. Here's a letter to support that, because we're going to take a syndicated program. And for those of you who listen to syndicated radio, the station that you're listening to it on gives a minute or two or three, whatever the arrangement contract is, to that talk show host and or their syndicator to air commercials. So what that means is that the radio station who is taking that syndicated programming doesn't have to pay for that program. They give up time, if you will. So they saved my salary. They saved my benefits. They took that syndicated host. He's still on that slot. And that was the first and only time I've ever been let go. So it took me 2 days before I could actually breathe, being a single parent and the wage earner of support of my family and mortgage and what have you. And I was reeling, like, now what? So fortunately, I was able to, I had a company that I owned that I got revenue from, and I was able actually within 2 weeks to get a full-time gig with the American Red Cross. I was their director of communications and development, and they are a cause near and dear to my heart. So I would, whenever the American Red Cross was in the news in our area, I was the person who would be speaking about the latest disaster and our clients and what we were doing and what our response was. And then because the American Red Cross is a national organization and disasters, as we know, happen all over the country almost at any time, I had the opportunity and I should say the good fortune to be involved in deployments. One of the biggest ones I was involved in was with a hurricane in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and I got deployed there, and all the lodging was taken up by people who had been displaced and by people who were there to help restore the infrastructure. And so public works and all that sort of thing, they come in and they help get the electricity going and the water running and the telephones and all of that's happening. So the first several nights I slept on a cot in a gymnasium at a college campus with 400 other American Red Cross volunteers. And then we'd wait in line in the morning to take our showers and grab an orange or a granola bar and a cup of coffee. And then we would go to where we were deployed to. So I got deployed to the University of Tuscaloosa, Alabama at Tuscaloosa, where we, the American Red Cross, had set up a shelter for folks displaced, and also was the spokesperson. So I spoke to ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox News about what we were doing on camera. It's quite the experience. If you find yourself with an inclination to volunteer your time, if you have the luxury to be able to do that, they're one of the top organizations that I would recommend. I'm a little biased, and I'll admit that, because I was in the trenches and I saw. But 91 cents out of every donated dollar goes to services. They're in the top five of charities that is really efficient with their money. In other words, there's no fat cats flying around on private jets and making amazing salaries and what have you. And because of that, I'm really proud of the work they do, but it's because of the volunteers and the donors, obviously, that make that possible. So that's one of the charities that I am really fond of. So since that time, then since 2008, I've been knocking around. I did podcasts for, I don't know, about a year and a half. If you look at MariaSanchezShow.com, you can see my library there. I have a blog that we publish three times a week. That's at themariasanchezshow.com. And fast forward to 2015, I'm casting about for what am I going to do with the rest of my life. And I decided that I'm going to go back to school. I started my master's degree in between child 3 and 4. Child 4 is going to be 25 later this month. So this is a dream that got hijacked 25 years ago, that I was in Portland, Oregon at the time with the father, my ex-husband of my 4 children. That's where his career had taken him. And I hadn't yet gotten pregnant with baby number 4. So I had baby 3, and I decided I'm going to go get my master's degree. And everyone's like, what are you, crazy? And I was like, whatever. If it takes me 7 years, at the end of the 7 years, I'll have my master's degree. Well, had baby 4, subsequent relocation back to Southern California, divorce, and a career in radio. my children were 2, 4, 6, and 8 when their dad and I divorced, and I had started my radio career while we were married. So that's how. Okay, so, yep. So I've been in radio going on 30 years. So I thought, I'm going to go back to school and get my master's degree. So you know what? I did just that, and I applied for and got accepted to the only school that I applied to, which is a school here in Southern California. It's called Pepperdine University. And unbeknownst to me, it's fairly well regarded. I think it's 22nd nationally in the field of psychology with its graduates. It's really well respected in Southern California. And I will be graduating in May with my master's in clinical psychology with an emphasis on marriage family therapy. So it has been the wildest ride of my life. It has been death-defying. It has been scary. And when they say, if your dreams don't scare you, you're not dreaming big enough. Well, I bit off almost more than I can chew. And to be a student again at this stage in my life, fortunately, the brain is there and is functioning. Thank goodness. I didn't realize how fortunate I am in that regard. I've gotten 1B in my classes, and that was in statistics, and that was my first semester, and it was a summer semester, which means the semester goes only for 7 weeks. You meet twice a week for 3 hours each time. So you're going to class, and I took 2 classes. So that was considered 6 units. I took 2 classes my first summer session. And I was driving to Los Angeles because that's where I could get into that class. It was the biggest mistake I made to take statistics my first semester back in graduate school. So I got to be in that class. I've gotten A's and everything else. So I am proud to say my GPA is a 3.9. I got inducted into the International Honor Society for Psychology. It's called Psychi, excuse me, my Greek. But more important than the GPA is the knowledge. I have learned so much in graduate school, not only about the field of psychology and about clients, but about myself. And that is talk about an added bonus to be able to uncover some family of origin things that I didn't even know. And to have this new awareness, I'm like, oh my gosh, this talk about a side benefit. So that's the beautiful thing about the field of psychology, is it's so applicable to day-to-day life. Unlike my mother, who loves to say to me, I took psychology 101 when I was in college. It's common sense. Duh. And I think to myself, why are you saying that to me? That's so insulting. And so I haven't said anything back to her until one of my more recent visits, which she said that to me, and I said, hey, Mom, has it occurred to you that a deployed service member who comes back and has PTSD is common sense? How about somebody who's been in domestic violence situations? Do you think that's common sense? Or somebody who's been raped? You think that's common sense? And guess what? She never responded, and she hasn't said it to me again. So I think I got my point across. There's nothing common sense about psychology. It's very convoluted, and it has many, many layers, and everyone can benefit from it. Not just people with presenting problems like depression or eating disorders or PTSD, or the list goes on and on and on. The beautiful thing about psychology, though, is that we get to bring ourselves into the room. So one of the things that is stressed a lot with where I'm studying is that you get to decide how you're going to lead your sessions and what you're going to do. And based on what the client's needs are, you will adapt accordingly. So we have all of this academic knowledge, and then we have our life experiences. And then we have this creative process where we collaborate with the clients and go on this journey together. So some clients want you to lead. Some want you to be their partner. Some want you to listen. Some want you to be proactive. And so guess what? the client's the boss because they're the expert in the room about themselves. And I just love that opportunity to be able to be adept and to be multidimensional. So I started seeing clients in May of this year, and the journey has been remarkable. I am interning at another amazing nonprofit that is called the Cancer Support Community. They are national. We at the Cancer Support Community see anybody who's been touched by cancer. So it could be a participant who has cancer. It could be their caretaker. It could be a family member who's has cancer and they want to have some information. We do groups for parents whose children have cancer. We do groups for kids who have cancer. We do young adult groups for those folks who have cancer. We even do bereavement groups for folks that have lost a loved one through cancer. So as I like to say, through no fault of their own, these people walk through the doors at the Cancer Support Community. It wasn't a bad decision. It wasn't a decision made in anger. It wasn't a violent decision. It wasn't an illegal decision. It was something that happened to them. I fortunately have thus far been blessed with a cancer-free existence myself, but both of my parents are cancer survivors, and one of my sons had a mastectomy in 2008, and he just had a lumpectomy in August of this year. So I know personally a bit about this journey. But I can tell you there's nothing that prepares me for I lead two participant groups a week, and there are people in that room that are dealing with, they're having treatment, they're having tests, they have gone in and out of remission. There was one young, I'm not going to share that because that would, even if you didn't know the details, I don't want to. You know, obviously this is anonymous, that what I'm saying. But so one of the groups that I led this week, one of the folks who chose to speak, burst into tears. And I have to say my eyes welled up. And one of the hardest things for me to do is to sit on my hands and not be able to touch, hug, comfort. And the other thing is not to offer a tissue. And we are told that if a client needs to have a tissue, they are to get it themselves. And I find that interesting. I don't know that I will always follow it. I am initially because I'm still learning. But they say that when we offer, the therapists offer the tissue, it either says to them, I'm uncomfortable with your emotions here, hide them, or you're making a decision for them. And so sure enough, this participant got up and helped themselves to a couple tissues. And I wanted to say later, the only reason I didn't do that is because I'm told, and I didn't do any of that. I just let the pain and suffering unfold. And the beauty of these groups, because they're participants, they're the ones that have cancer. By and large, they say almost weekly, this is the only place where I get to be real. This is where I get to have my real emotions, because they're trying to keep a stiff upper lip for their loved ones or for their spouses or for their family members or their friends. They don't want to be a Debbie Downer in the room. But when they come and see us, and once a week they can confide and they can share and they can break down and they can be vulnerable and they can be scared. And it's just amazing. So if anybody that you know is affected, or you are, by cancer, because it's a national organization, look up Cancer Support Community. It used to be called the Wellness Center, and they rebranded a while ago. So now it's called the Cancer Support Community. I cannot recommend them enough. The work that I see and the work that the group does is just amazing. So that's my little unpaid plug for the Cancer Support, which is a nonprofit, by the way. Can't operate without, again, time, treasure, or talent. So it's, you know, I'm volunteering my time there. I'm interning there. So I'm in California. I don't know how it is in other states, but in California, you do hours, 3,000 hours before you are allowed to sit for the licensing exam. And you can only start counting those hours when academically you've gotten to X amount of point in your studies, and then you go for it. So what I've learned also at the cancer support community, there's a couple gals that are close to my age, and they're, one of them, she's getting her PhD. The other has already graduated with her master's, and she's getting up to her 3,000 hours. And I'm like, there are other people out there like me. That the beautiful thing about psychology is, unlike most careers in the United States, there is no ageism. I experienced ageism and sexism in my radio career. That's not true in psychology. In fact, wisdom is celebrated. So Pepperdine bangs a drum that you can't be a therapist or expect to be a good therapist unless you've been in therapy yourself. So they keep strongly recommending that. So September a year ago, so about 13 months now, I went in search of a therapist to start my therapeutic journey. I had had one before, and we ended up, I did the work that I wanted to do and needed to do. And then she and I became friends. So I couldn't go back to her because our relationship had changed. And so I found a great referral source who was full. He couldn't take me, but he said, I can refer you to a colleague. And I said, great. And he said, do you want a man or a woman? And I said, I don't care about the gender. This is what I do care about. I don't want a kid. He's like, really? And I said, no, I want somebody who's lived. I don't want somebody whose jaw is dropping every time I open my mouth because they haven't lived it. They haven't experienced it. They've read about it. You know, I was like, no. So he referred me to a man, which I didn't care, who happens to have a wife and three young kids, and he's probably 20 years younger than I am, but he's so wise, and I have learned so much from him, so it's been an amazing journey, this journey we call life. So if you are daring to dream and you have dream stealers in your life, don't listen to them. If you're daring to dream and you want to do something that you have kept yourself from doing, do it. Go ahead. We only have this one life that we know about. So take full advantage of it. So again, our number is 888-627-6008. You're listening to Shadow Politics. My name is Maria Sanchez, and ordinarily our host is Senator Michael D. Brown from the District of Columbia, but he had a complication come up at the last minute. So you get to hear me by myself. So before we get into the debates this week on Wednesday, 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, and the latest poll that's been released since the audio of Trump denigrating and talking about poorly about women, I'm going to do a fun thing. So we here in Southern California have the Coachella Valley, and there's a huge rock and roll thing that goes on in the Coachella Desert. But something that happened on October 7th, 8th, and 9th, and then just happened this weekend, the 14th, 15th, and the 16th, was called the Desert Trip. And they called it Ocella. Why? Ocella? Because it was a lot of boomers that went to it. And why? Because here was the lineup. Bob Dylan and the Rolling Stones on Friday night, Paul McCartney and Neil Young on Saturday night, and Roger Waters and The Who on Sunday night, both weekends. Again, October 7th, 8th, and 9th, and October 14th, 15th, and 16th. So Bob Dylan also made news this week because on Thursday he won the Nobel Prize for Literature, and he is, because of his amazing songwriting, obviously. So this is different. Like, if you've heard of Burning Man, I've interviewed a couple folks in the past who've attended Burning Man. You know, it's, people are out in the desert and the wind is blowing and the sand is blowing. And well, because boomers were involved in this, they had on-site dining with 100-plus vendors. They had vegetarian choices, vegan choices, gluten-free choices. They had, and again, keep in mind, this is Southern California. So if you're not from the area, you're probably just going to be scratching your head. By the way, as I take a sip on my turmeric beverage, Usually I have tea when we're broadcasting, and Michael always says, "You Southern Californians," or "You're Californians." I'm literally having turmeric. It's not even tea. It's turmeric hot beverage. So at this desert trip, you can Google this to re-verify me, because they had breast pump stations with refrigeration. Now, that's obviously not a boomer is going to be breastfeeding, but nevertheless, they had gender-neutral restrooms. I would love to hear what the senator has to say about these offerings. You couldn't bring coolers. You couldn't bring drugs. You couldn't bring drones. You couldn't bring pets. They had a general store, and you could buy tickets for one night or two or three. They had something called car camping, which you could put up a little tent right next to your car. That was $99. They had RV camping, which was $950. They had teepees and tents for $1,600. And then they had something called a safari tent. That would set you back $10,000. But that included 2 3-day passes. It included help with your luggage to go back and forth. It included transportation from the safari tent to the venue, etc. So we've got the senator on line one. Michael.
Maria.
Hi, handsome.
Carrying the water. You know,
what's that?
Thanks for filling in and making sure that, you know, you're doing a great job running the show, and I really appreciate it. Because I've been a little under the weather, as you know.
Yes.
But I just wanted to call in and talk a little bit. I've been listening to you, and you're doing a great job. And I'm just sitting here convalescing, fine. But they've got me in. They won't release me from the hospital till tomorrow because it's Sunday. But it looks like I'm making a full recovery. So
okay,
everything's
good.
Pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. I didn't share anything. I just said that you had a last minute complication.
Yeah, you know, complication of my diabetes. And if you're out there and you're listening and you're diabetic, take care of yourself, because what happened to me was I had a small blister on my foot that got infected, and it went from being a small infection to being a raging infection. And I was on antibiotics for a month, and it didn't clear up, so they had to put me in the hospital and do an MRI and do, you know, a few minor things. But it looks like now it is clearing up, so that's good that we caught it in time. But you know, if you're diabetic, make sure you take care of yourself. It's a steep learning curve, and I'll tell you, I was just shocked at how quickly things went bad for me. But now, because I'm getting great care at Sibley Memorial Hospital in Washington, it's going great. And I got to tell you that this is one of those new. The hospital has only been open 2 weeks. It's a very old hospital. It's over 100. Yeah, it's over 100 years old. But they closed the old part and they built a gigantic new facility, which is run by Johns Hopkins, and it's like a country club. I mean, I have a. There are no semi-private rooms, only private rooms.
Wow.
You order your dinner off a menu. When you call to order it, they call it room service. I mean, I've got a 50-inch plasma TV, so I got to watch all the football games today. Yeah, and I told them, I said, I'm not sure I'm going home because, number one, this is a better TV than I've got, and two, the nurses have been nicer to me than Mrs. Brown has been in years. So I'm having a good time here. But what I've also done, and what you probably want to talk about for a few minutes, is I've been watching Fox, CNN, and CSNBC for several days, because really the problem I'm having is with part of my foot. So I'm really, you know, I'm not in any pain, or unconscious. I'm just laying here in a bed getting IV antibiotics and watching TV. So
you're still on the IV antibiotics?
I'm sorry?
You're still on the IV antibiotics?
Yeah. Still on the IV antibiotics. 6 weeks I got to stay on it. But the reason I'm in the hospital is because they don't know what the infection is yet. They did a culture after a minor surgical procedure. So tomorrow they'll get the results of the culture, and then they can send me home with antibiotics, which I have to continue to take intravenously, but I can administer them myself. So they put a little port in you. I forget what they call it, but and you just administer them yourself once a day. But I got to stay on them for 6 weeks. And that's what I mean. You know, this all came out of a blister that I had on my foot. From walking in an old pair of shoes.
I spoke to my folks today because my mom has neuropathy, and I told her about your situation, and because it can happen to anybody too, in that regard.
Anybody. Yeah, and that's the thing about the neuropathy. Normally, if you don't have any neuropathy in your feet, you feel that you've got a blister, but I never felt it. So what happened was it opened. And I went to the podiatrist and I looked at my foot and I said, you got a blister and, put a bandage on it, basically a little Band-Aid kind of thing, and just keep an eye on it. And somewhere along the way, I picked up an infection, and they're not sure whether it's MRSA or something else, but it's been drug resistant. So that's why I'm in the situation I'm in. But luckily we caught it quick enough that they think that, I'll make a full recovery. But it's a long road.
Both of my folks have gotten MRSA, and they both got it in the hospital, by the way.
Right. Well, that's one nice thing about being in a hospital. It's only a couple of weeks old, too. And they I'm the first person in this room, I think. So that's been a good thing.
For sharing. That's really brave of you to share.
No, I got to tell you, I feel silly, Maria, because I'm sitting in here with my toe bandaged up, and there's real sick people here. You know what I mean? And they keep on coming in, like when they take me for an MRI or something, they will come in with a gurney and say, okay, we're going to lift you out of the bed. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I can walk. And they're like, you can walk? And I'm like, yes, my toe. And I stand up and walk across the room and sit on the thing and, it just makes you thankful for the little problems you have compared to, the fact that there are really, really sick people here because it's a hospital.
Well, you're sick too, Michael. You can't downplay that. I mean, yes, you're fit and able, but an infection that you can't get rid of. That's scary.
You only know I'm sick because you know about psychology. I'm talking about physicality. But I am too. That's true. But these people, there are people here with really serious problems. So I'm thankful that it's just a toe and that we found it in time. But the biggest thing is my blood pressure keeps going up because I'm sitting here watching CNN and Fox News for 3 days, and all they're talking about.
You actually watch Fox?
Oh yeah, of course. I watch Fox because I don't think you can be a politician, and this is a thing that I think is wrong with politics in America. I don't think you can be a politician without understanding how the other side feels.
I can't agree with you more. I watch CNN. Well, I listen. I have Sirius in my car. I don't have a TV. But yeah. I listen to CNN probably 10 to 1 that I listen to Fox. I already know what they're going to say. I want to hear what the other side has to say.
Right.
And I go to MSNBC too. Also.
Yeah, me too. And, and that's the thing. And I hope that when all this stuff is over, that both sides understand what's going on. I'm a Hillary Clinton superdelegate, as you know, but I hope that the Clinton people understand, and I will try to help in this regard, that when you have a candidate that's so opposed to their position, and the candidate has as much support as Donald Trump has gotten, that there's something you have to listen to out there. These people are dissatisfied with America, and we're not talking about a handful of people. We're talking about millions of people that are dissatisfied with what's going on, and I think you need to hear that and you need to say that, you know, all voters are equal and their concerns are as real as the concerns of the people that support you. And that's the only way we're going to get through this, I think, is that if we all understand that, you know, we as politicians, we all understand that it's more important for us to listen than it is for us to talk.
If you'd like to listen, RT has something to say. RT, welcome to the program.
Hi, this is RT.
Hi, RT.
Russian television.
Oh, Russian.
No, I'm joking. I'm joking. I was just mentioning on an email in there when you were talking about what do you watch, and I threw out RT.
I see.
Meaning RT is a big news network that everybody has heard about, I thought, and that a lot of people probably listen to, even though it's Russian television. It's a point of view of them on us and what's happening worldwide. So it's
is it in English?
It is, and it's a different perspective, and it draws me in every time. I mean, I'm shocked. It's what Clinton mentioned. Remember, Miss Clinton mentioned that the news networks were losing out to such organizations, and she used RT as one of them because it's just become such an alternate voice from mainstream media.
What about Al Jazeera?
That's another, but most people, I think, that are on the mainstream side would look to RT more as an outside standpoint that doesn't have any conflicts of interest from parties within the U.S. to any great degree.
I see. Do they talk about Snowden?
I'm sorry?
Does RT talk about Snowden, Edward Snowden?
They talk about everything.
Do they?
They talk about from the drug wars of Afghanistan, the U.S. occupation of all the various countries, to the East-West division in Aleppo, and how we only monitor the killings in the East versus the West, and the barrel bombing in the West versus it also being done in the East versus the West, and all these different, and so they give you a different perspective. People that actually come out there and talk about the drone warfare and the actual numbers of killings on the ground and how, you know, people there in those particular, and it's usually got an anti-U.S. bend to it to some degree in respect that it's showing you what these people might see. So I got to say, I watch all the news networks and I read all the headlines across all the different, from Democrat to Libertarian to Republican to, you know, out and left ballpark. But RT is a good one. I'm just mentioning that.
Well, thank you for contributing.
Well, yeah.
What do you think, Michael?
I was interviewed by Press TV. Now, I don't know if you've heard of Press TV, but I've been interviewed a couple times by them, but they're Iranian television.
Really?
And they're listened to in the Arab world, and they're very anti-American. They're super anti-American, but they didn't invite me back because they didn't realize that I had worked for Jimmy Carter, and I was on their show one time on an interview show, and they said, why do Americans persecute the Iranians when the Iranians have never done anything mean to the United States? And I'm like, what, are you kidding me? Because I remember when I worked for Carter, right? Every day we were listening to the hostages. You know, where they going with the hostages out. I said, you invaded the United States, you know, because the American embassy is sovereign territory.
Exactly.
And they're like, oh, well, you know, you deserved it, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden they said, well, the show, whatever the talk show was, Talk with Remy or something, they said, is no particular length, so we're getting off the air right now. And that's the last I heard from them. You know?
That's funny.
And a friend of mine said, oh, don't worry about Press TV. The only people that listen to it are radicals in the CIA. And I said, oh, that's great. Now I've got a record with the CIA. But,
great.
I think you have to, I think Don's right. If you know, you listen, you know, and this is what President Kennedy used to do. He used to like to get people in a room that didn't agree with him and listen to all sides of a particular argument, and then go out and make a decision about something. And I think that's a great way to do it. You know,
I do too.
My father used, my father used to say, you can't learn anything new from somebody who agrees with you. And it's true. You know, all you can do is reinforce your beliefs. But if you want to learn, you need opposition. You need to hear the other side of it. So I
agree,
think that's
Michael. That's why we get along so well, even though we have a few philosophical differences. But I would say that we agree on more than we disagree, you and I.
Well, I would say that, too. But the real reason we get along is because you're wonderful and you put up with me.
Hey, ditto, because I have such respect for you. I mean, I'm honored. And I was thinking about when I was sharing with the listeners about my – where I am, I mean, I've been involved with the Republican Party actively, not nationally as much, although I did co-head Bush for re-election 43 in my county. But when Meg Whitman ran for governor, which she didn't do very well against Jerry Brown, but she, and if anybody knows who she is, she's currently the president CEO of Hewlett-Packard, but she was you know, from eBay, et cetera. She's worth over $2 billion. But and she's also supporting Hillary Clinton, I might add. But I was her surrogate spokesperson in the greater Los Angeles area when she did run. And so if she her schedule was unavailable, then they would hit me up and I would go and speak on her behalf. And I found it interesting. And she fell in line with Hillary Clinton in August that she would – she said that – Hillary had reached out to her a month before, and that's when we started to hear that Hillary was reaching out to prominent Republicans. And Meg Whitman said, yeah, you got me and a donation because I don't want Trump.
Well, you know, this is the thing that, and I think this is a good segue. I think that at this point, this is a really important point that the Republican Party you know, has to survive this. I've always said that America would not be a better place if Democrats ran everything any more than it would be if Republicans ran everything. We need each other. You know, that's what makes America great is the fact that we can have this open dialogue. And I think we're seeing that if I had to come away with something from the past 3 days of watching Fox and CNN and MSNBC, it's that, you know, there needs to be a strong Republican Party after this is all over. And I worry about that because of the damage that seems to being inflicted right now with this stuff about a rigged election and, you know, without the other stuff, you know. And I think that's why you're seeing some mainstream Republicans like the Speaker of the House and Paul Ryan and Mike Pence and some of these people coming out and distancing, not really distancing themselves, not saying they're not going to support Trump, but putting themselves in a position that if it doesn't work out, they can still go on. Even Renz Priebus, I've heard say, you know, candidates come and go, but the Republican Party is here. This is, you
but
know, it, there's going to be a Republican Party.
Interesting, though, Michael, is that the latest poll from Washington Post and ABC News has Clinton only ahead by 4 points, 47
yeah,
to 43.
But the NBC poll has her ahead by 11 points. And, you know, the deal is that Ronald Reagan, we always talk about the Reagan landslide, mm-hmm. but the truth about the Reagan landslide is he only won by a handful of votes, but he won by a handful of votes in every damn state in the Union. Jimmy Carter won two states. Ronald Reagan won 92% of the electoral vote, which is, I'm sure it's the highest amount of the electoral vote that anybody's ever gotten in modern history. And that's why they call it a landslide. Not because he ran, not because he really won by a big percentage, but he won solidly across the nation. And if I had to make a prediction, I think that's what's going to happen. I think that You know, not that this thing can't change. There's 3 weeks left. It's changing dramatically now, and it could change. You know, I'm not. This is my prediction, but I have to be honest and tell you that I've been wrong as many times as I've been right. So,
well, and we still have Wednesday with the debate.
We still have Wednesday.
Yeah, because I think Trump got himself back in the race with the debate two performance. And apparently both of them were preparing today and not on the campaign trail. But I'll be curious to see if he can keep wraps on himself on Wednesday or not.
Well, that, that's the thing.
When he comes unglued, it's very unflattering, and that's when he's his best enemy.
Well, and I think you're going to continue to see that. I really do. I think that this story about these nine women who've come out, this is alive more because of what he's doing than what anybody else is doing. If he had left it alone and let it be, because there's no way he can stop it. There's no, it's not like these women are not going to come out if he leaves it alone. But there's no way that he can really affect that. And he's just keeping it alive by being out
there
and fighting.
Well, we had the same thing happen here in California with Schwarzenegger. There was gals that came out at the very last minute, and it didn't stop him from getting elected. But Gloria Allred, front and center with her press conferences.
But let's remember, none of these nine women have accused Trump of anything. All these nine women have done is confirm what he's admitted to. Arnold Schwarzenegger didn't admit to any of this. Trump said, "I reach up women's skirts." And now we have women coming out saying, "He reached up my skirt." And Trump said, "I go in and see these girls naked because I run the pageant." And now we have pageant people coming out saying he came in the dressing room and saw me naked. So what they're doing is confirming what he's admitted. So, I mean, therein, I think, lies the difference. And he should just leave it alone and move on. Because if you think this is important, that, you know, if you think this behavior, what they're talking about, is important, that's one thing. But if you think the issues are more important, that's another thing. And he should be talking, I think, about the issues, because he's not going to change people's minds on this. I really don't think he's going to change anybody's mind. I think that there are people that believe these women and that matters to them. And I think there are people that don't believe them or that it doesn't matter to them. And he should just leave it alone and move on to something else. I truly believe that.
Well,
but
here's something interesting,
think he will.
Michael, and I know you've been in the political arena, but I've been in the entertainment arena, and dressing rooms, there's no privacy in dressing rooms. And it's not out of modesty. It's out of timing. So people take off and put on things in front of each other all the time in co-ed situations because of the clock that's ticking or the breaks that are happening and whatever. I'm not saying that that's a reason that a man should be walking in is to see people naked. I'm just saying I've been on sets where I've had to change clothes and I was in my bra and panties and there was other men around, but I had to get back for the next segment and it was live and I had to do a wardrobe change. So that might sound peculiar to the average person, but that is what goes on behind the scenes. Runway shows, television shows, that sort of thing. When you've got that clock ticking, you don't. There isn't no such thing as modesty.
Well, that may be true, but I think that people that believe that he's a sexual predator, I don't think you're going to change their mind. And
I think you're right. I agree.
I think that people say, I think that the people that have said these women have come out at the last minute and it's suspicious, I don't think you're going to change their mind. So you need to move on and say, okay, you believe whatever you believe, but this is, this is what we're going to talk to. And right now he is behind with women and he's getting more behind with women.
Yes.
And one thing we know in politics, is you cannot win an election without women.
Yes,
more women
I agree
vote
with
in
you.
America. Yeah, more women vote in America than men, and
yep.
and you got to have them. So you know, and I just say that I'm not a Trump supporter. I don't like him. I hope he doesn't get elected. But you know, just as if I was, you know, if he hired me for his campaign and I agreed to work for him, this would be the advice I would give him. I would say move on.
So, Michael, thank you for sharing.
Time, and
can I? Before we only have a couple minutes, can I tie something up with one of our guests earlier this year?
Yeah.
On April 10th, we had Kevin Hines, who survived a suicide attempt from jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
There have been 33 that survived. He was number 26. But just today in the news is that they have hired 5 new officers, will be hired to patrol the Golden Gate Bridge specifically to look for jumpers. And I just thought that was a nice end to Kevin's story, because Kevin was advocating for that, because he said if anybody had tried to prevent him, he would have listened. He wouldn't have done the jump. So they've said that just this year alone, 2016, they have intervened 138 times successfully.
That's amazing.
But isn't that
138
something?
138 people they've saved, yeah.
Yes.
And that's great. And I know that's a cause that's near and dear to your heart, because you study psychology and depression is a terrible thing. And just let me end on this note that I'm seriously depressed over what those nasty Los Angeles Dodgers
uh-huh.
My poor Washington Nationals. And now we're just going to have to wait till next year. And I don't know what I think they're playing tonight. I think the Dodgers are playing. Who's the next up? The Cubs? Is that
I quick went to look for the story,
remember.
And then I got detracted by other more pertinent stories, because there was stuff that I didn't get to. One involves alcohol, by the way. It was a story that was released this week that says that alcohol is a cancer-causing substance, and it's a proven human carcinogen.
Oh, my God. Don't let Mrs. Brown hear that.
Well,
does
me
that
too.
Does that include red wine? I hope not.
They said no matter what kind. But don't tell her.
Now
Let's
we're going to have
it.
To keep Mrs. Brown off the Golden Gate Bridge. It red wine.
I'll send you the link, okay?
All right.
Hey, continued recovery, Michael. I'm so glad that you were able to join us. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, and thank you for carrying the load.
Of course. My pleasure.
Really
my pleasure.
A great pleasure to work with you, Maria.
It's my honor. I really am humbled to have this opportunity with you. Thank you. Okay,
we'll
so sweet prayers.
And hey, we'll have a lot to talk
all
about.
Our listeners have a great week this week, and we look forward to touching base again with you next Sunday.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.